And here we are. It is now starting to get entirely too hot outside. My allergies are fucking my face raw right now. Mother Nature's got her gigantic girl cock all up my nose holes, all down my throat. I don't know what to do about it. It sucks. Does anybody else feeling the allergies?
You're not describing it in a way that gets across that it sucks.
You know, look, there is a bit of a bit to it that is maybe perhaps titillating. But you know, I really just it really sucks waking up every morning with like your sinus is congested, your eyes are scratchy, your throat is sore, and you never.
Polly, I'm aware we got a cat.
Oh, good.
And guess what I discovered about myself, about my body?
I bet this one's going to be a real doozy.
I didn't know what allergies were necessarily. Boy, I know now. The itchy eyes.
So you've never had this experience before.
Not like pollen or anything or dust or whatever you get.
Yeah, that's what I get. Mine is like fresh cut grass and pollen and dust. It's like literally every single thing that you can be allergic to going into spring and summer. Check it out.
Dreadful.
Getting face fucked. Let's go.
About a giant thing of Allegra.
Oh god!
Not the generic brand.
I cannot take Allegra, Benadryl, none of that shit because I just end up being eepy all day, and that sucks. So
Allegra doesn't seem to be making me eepy. Benadryl definitely knocks me the fuck out.
Yeah, yeah. I used to get these really good allergy shots from my ear, nose, throat doctor back in the day. Mm-hmm. And then he turned out to be kind of an asshole, so I don't get those anymore. And since he, formulated them himself, you know.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So now it's just, I'm struggle bussing it. But that was, 10 years ago. So, I guess you get used to it in a way, but you're still always just going to bitch about it.
Yeah, I'm excited because I love this fucking cat.
Mm-hmm.
She's very sweet. Mm-hmm. She's very sweet and very cuddly and very nice. Mm-hmm. But my body.
Your body just says no.
So I'm just going to take drugs every day.
That's fantastic.
For the rest of the cat's life.
There's literally nothing that could be bad about taking drugs every day. I mean, you find me a single story of anybody that's taken drugs every day and anything bad happened, that'd be wild.
I already take an acid pill and melatonin every day. I'm good.
See, you're fine. I take an antacid every day. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I think there was a lag and I heard John said, I take acid. I'm like, what?
Sure. You know, look, John, look, if you are working a corpo job, you got to get through that shit. You got to get through that shit somehow. How's it going, everybody? Welcome to SoxCast episode 170, the allergies edition, apparently. Y'all, before we jump into the show proper, I kind of wanted to take a moment here at the top to kind of mention something very important that happened recently. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with us and owning a website and how long we've been around and all that, but back on April 9th, of 2005, a little website launched called SocksMakePeopleSexy.net. And April 9th of this year marks the 20th year that we've been together as a community for the most part. Is that not just kind of the craziest thing in 2025 modern day internet?
Fucking stunning. Yeah. Definitely. I don't know how many people can say that they've done that. They've threaded that needle.
Yeah, it's everything. I have been in every kind of community. I have seen everything go wrong that can go wrong. And that has always been the thing that has been in the back of my mind. It's just oh God, how's it going to blow up? How am I going to blow it up? You know, and I guess I had a lot of inspiration to not on how to not run a website or a community from previous experiences that myself and Red have had.
Yeah. I was going to say, we went through several of those blow-ups in the earlier 2000s.
God, there were like five or six.
That's what forums do.
There were like five or six community forums, and every single one of them just completely detonated.
The first forum I got really into detonated because the owner got arrested for cybercrime.
Oh, good. Oh. that's good.
So that's fun.
I don't think that any of the forums that I've been a member of ended because of crime. So I guess that's one thing. Mostly just that assholes. We know of. Just mostly assholes. But aside from like BBSs, we've kind of like been through every like major community platform thing that you can do.
Forums and IRC.
Yeah, we had an IRC that was fantastic. We had forums. I can't mention forums without wanting to cry because I miss them so much, and I really wish, you know, we had a good run at bringing them back.
I feel like maybe we were in the wrong moment, and I think we're maybe approaching a better moment for it.
So.
I think because that was pre Twitter imploding,
sure,
but yeah. Post and people are, you know, Discord is, you know, starting to make noise. I mean, Discord's always on the way towards being shittier, but they're making extra noises now, like doing video ads and shit.
And you know, you can just throw AI at any image you see now on. You know, just natively in the application. So, yeah. But maybe we are on the cusp of something special happening again. I would certainly welcome it. And if, like, the demand was there and people wanted it, I would absolutely, like, try. So, hey, if you are interested at all in Sliders and Socks coming back, like, let's have a conversation about it. Y'all know how to talk to me.
Yeah. I'm also up for, I just don't want to pay for a VPS yet. I'm not ready to make that kind of commitment.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in like the nitty gritty of running like PHP BB or whatnot. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we can talk there too.
Yeah. Yeah. But
good place to have the conversation.
Absolutely. But I just like, I got so emotional. Like I realized it at first that like, oh shit, socksmakepeoplesexy.net is now 20 years old. And then, you know, I had that moment where I'm just kind of like in the moment, oh, that feels great. And then I, you know, typed up a little post that you can read on the site.
That was really sweet.
It'll be under this, this post. And when I got through with that, I was just emotional the rest of the day thinking like, how did we do this and how did we get this far and I didn't fuck it up somehow, you know. but big thanks to everybody out there. We thank our community a lot on the podcast, but I think that this is especially a moment where I want to give a very specific heartfelt thanks to everybody that has been a member of the site or anybody that's contributed, whether we are on speaking terms or not, it doesn't matter. Everybody kind of helped kind of make the fabric that is this site and this community. And it means a lot to me that we're all still here and everybody still feels at home and it's just as welcoming as it's always been. So thank you to everybody for being a part of this, whatever the hell it is. And we plan to just keep doing what we do. Oh, I would say you're welcome, but I think that just makes me sound like conceited in some way. I've always tried to keep ego out of it.
Probably I've been here half my life.
That's insane. You know what I found
actually
out? Go ahead, Rhett.
It's pretty close for you two too.
If we keep going, it'll be half our life for me and Polly as well eventually.
Yeah, it absolutely. I found out, like for the longest time, I thought me and Rhett were like the people in the community that had known each other for the longest time because we started playing PSO on Dreamcast in 2001. And it turns out, I found out this week that Iffy has been friends with another member of the community named Kat since like 1997.
Incredible.
And I'm insane. How have I known Iffy this long? How have I known Kat this long? And that's never come up. That's just the most insane thing to me. To my immediate virtual right, he's tossing coins into the fountain of fuck. It's Rhett.
Hello.
Hey. How you doing? You doing okay over there with all those HoloLive graduations going on, Rhett?
No. I was like, are we bringing this up?
Three in a row, man. Like, right at the end of the month. And you're culminating with Gal Gura? You're just like, you're literally, that's crazy. Like, that is the 1-2-3 combo. Like,
I remember like doing this really sad Doom post on Blue Sky about Xion.
Oh God.
And then like a week later, Mume and I'm like,
gone.
I'm just like, no, fuck it. It was like, I'm way sadder about this one. And then Gura after
and then
that,
Gura.
Like now we're just fucking tired right now.
Gura was expected for a lot of obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But like Mume really like, it's the one that like, actually kind of made me feel a bit like, oh man, I did not realize I actually
that
liked her
fucking
that much.
Video.
Oh, it's so much.
She, oh, I feel so bad.
Poor girl. We love you, Mume.
I don't want to get too into it, but like, yeah. The number of girls that are leaving that company,
it's
like
crazy.
A little, like, but specifically like leaving like with their health broken.
Yeah,
is disturbing.
They all sound so freaking broken. But hey, Gura's gonna be back. That Senzawa account is winding up. It's verified now. She's following Riggers and artists. She's gonna be back. It's gonna be the craziest, most like lucrative graduation stream ever.
Mm-hmm. I do want to draw attention to this because it is the funniest thing in the world. That the Cubs did shut out the Dodgers at a home game 16-0
Yes!
Evaporated.
As a lifelong Cubs fan, believe mm-hmm. me, nothing brought me more joy.
And that was after the Dodgers won last year, right?
Yeah,
they beat the Cubs multiple times this year.
Yeah.
This was very cathartic.
This was just like an out of nowhere. How the shit did they like just send people out on the field who did not know how to play baseball at all, who'd never even seen the sport?
Oh, it's the Cubs. Just send out old Rickety Joe.
Yeah, send out Rickety Joe. Hey, is the janitor available?
I live quite near the Cubs. They are my and I went to one baseball game last year and I sat in the sun and I drank booze and watched the Kings game, and it was honestly very pleasant. I like to go to one more game this year. Mm-hmm. So I'm flirting with the idea of being a fan of a sports team, and it's the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah,
so
like I've always been a Cubs fan. Mm-hmm. I've always been a Florida Panthers fan with regards to hockey. So if you need my mm-hmm. if you need to know my politics, there you go.
Cool.
But to my immediate virtual left, it's Satan's favorite son, John Thayer.
That's me.
Hey, Hi. How you doing?
Doing the devil's work as always.
Doing the devil's work, yeah. Somebody's got to do it.
Telling people the devil tells people to make smaller games.
I was about to say, does the devil tell people to scope their games the hell down?
He's also got a list of these are the specifically good Kirby games.
Yeah,
and it's two of them.
The Kirby discourse that happened in Discord this week was so juicy.
We can fucking get into it if you're ready. Let's do Kirby. I know we said Rhett going first. Fuck it.
John's ready. He's chomping at the bit.
Let's talk about Kirby.
Okay. John, let's talk about Kirby.
All right. Set the stopwatch. We're gonna fucking Kirby.
We're in there.
Right. So I didn't like Kirby for a long time.
I know.
I thought Kirby...
You were very hostile toward Kirby for a long time.
Well, I was hostile towards the idea of platformers that were more than a half hour long, which, you know, to give credit to, you know, 20-year-old always being annoying on Twitter, John, is correct.
Correct.
That is the correct perspective to have, that platformers are supposed to be 20 to 30 minutes long or shorter. Mm-hmm. And anything longer than that is going against God's light. But if the format of, you know, 3+ hour platform with save files is worth anything, there are a handful of games that I'm talking about, games with linear stages. I'm excluding like exploration platformers.
Yeah,
that's its own thing. But if the format is worth anything, there are games that are good examples of it. I really like Celeste. I talked about that a game of the year. Mm-hmm. I played Donkey Kong Country 2 mm-hmm. a little bit ago. I really like those games, the first two of those games.
Yeah. The first two.
specifically.
For no reason at all. I just haven't played 3 because everyone says it sucks. I was like,
oh. Well, everybody's right.
Okay, good. And Donkey Kong 64 looks like trash. So
God, that's a whole other exploration.
Water from a book game there.
Yeah.
Or that.
So then there's Kirby. So I played like Dreamland 1 and Adventure. It was like, yeah, these seem pretty good. And then Dreamland 2. And I was like, don't like that. And I think I went a long time and I got like violently like anti save point platformer. So I was kind of like, is Adventure even good? Come on.
Oh, come on.
And I just went a long time, like kind of having this sort of absolutist take, like, okay, these games are all the same. They're all just like 3 hours. You play through the stages once and then go on with your life. None of it makes any real impression. They're just boring games for children. A friend brought this up, like maybe more than like any other big mainline Nintendo series, Kirby violently changes its whole approach and style depending on like who's at the helm of a different game. Mm-hmm. So I played Kirby 64 last year and I didn't fucking like it.
Yeah, it's surprise, surprise. Those 64 iterations kind of batting real bad right now.
Well, it's really fucking slow.
Oh, and God. Unbearably slow. I like the aesthetic. I think it works for
gorgeous
what that game is doing. But man, it is just no fun to play.
Some of the cutest fairies of all time.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
Is this a
not giving it at least a 7 out of 10 for fairies?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's like it's really slow and you have like 128 powers, most of which are
trash.
Nearly every power is like one thing. Kirby spits a spike up the top of his head and that's it. Like they're all almost all like really boring. They have very little like nuance or interest and most of them are trash. Mm-hmm. Like you said. And the ones that are like useful aren't useful in like a way that's fun or interesting. Mm. What they're used for is opening color coded doors to get the collectibles you need to get to in order to unlock the true end, which is another thing Dreamland 2 does that sucks. And it's apparently something Dreamland 3 does. And it's going to probably sucks there too. Mm. But I revisited Adventure not too long ago. I replayed Superstar last year after 64 and it was like a breath of fresh air. Mm. Oh my God. Cause Superstar is like every power is like a mini fighting game moveset. It's crazy.
I'm gonna commit an act of
go for it.
I'm going to get myself skewered. I could never get into Adventure or not Adventure, but with Superstar. It's a game that I feel like I need to revisit in a modern context because I've absolutely had that happen where, you know, I just never connected with it the way everybody else does.
Oh my God.
You know, maybe that's something I need to put on the old project list.
Go ahead.
I thought Polly was about to restart the podcast because we weren't recording, and that would have been less offensive to me than I don't like Superstar.
Oh my God.
Okay. Superstar isn't about like a big overall arc,
but it still has one at the end.
It does still have a cool. It does still have a cool little finale. But like the cool thing with Superstar is that they built this crazy verb set with all these powers that are again like very varied and feel amazing. They got Sakurai hit stop all over the place.
Oh,
it's just game feels central. Because Smash feels great and everything, almost a bunch of stuff that makes Smash feel good is there in Superstar and a little bit in Adventure and a little bit in Dreamland. Sakurai was good at this.
Yep.
Yeah, right?
Is that the third Sakurai game for Kirby? Because the first game was just a very basic, like you inhale and spit out. And then Adventure was like, okay, what if you get powers? And then Superstar was like, what if the powers had more than one ability?
Yep. What if you could open the start menu? And the powers have like three pages of move lists, like a fucking King of Fighters game.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's like, amazing.
Big escalation in those three games of like exploring what they can do with it. for some reason.
I love the first game because that's just like a great 20-minute game boy platformer.
Really fun little, just a quickie, real quick fix.
The tragedy is that I was thinking about which one I had as a kid, and it was Dreamland 2.
Oh, no.
So Superstar was the second one I played. It was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, Kirby's good, it turns out. Again, it's just like the game, they're wildly different. Like the Shimamura games are slower. They don't have the big fighting game movesets. They focus a lot on, oh, make sure you come here with the right power from another stage so that you can open this door to get this collectible and then get all the collectibles so you can unlock the cool final boss. And they are cool final bosses, for the record. He's good at that. But then, the Sakurai games are like crazy action. Like, they're easy, at least until you do like the crazy extra or boss arena stuff. But they just feel like, they just feel very delightful and joyful to exist in because the feel of them is so refined and strong. That's really it. Like, I feel like Superstar to me is just like, hey, we made this incredible game design language, and then we just made like seven cute little adventures using it.
Yeah. Like, for me, I really like how that game plays with its own structure in every different game.
Yeah. Great Cave Offensive feels completely different from every other game. Revenge of Meta Knight is the best Kirby game.
I think the reason that I bounced off that game way back in the day is because I did the Great Cave Offensive like real early, and it's just kind of like, I think that like, it's cool in what it is and its scope, and it's a great little way to explore the world, but I think that like the probably the more action oriented stuff would have been the better place to go.
I mean, it's not my favorite. Like, my, like I said, like Revenge of Meta Knight's my favorite because it's like a 20-minute Star Fox level.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's so good. It has an escape sequence. You blow up the core of a ship and then fight Meta Knight and then have an escape sequence.
Which is always awesome. If a game has an escape sequence, you're just an automatic banger.
I mean, the whole thing is designed around like seamless transitions between levels and like having it be one narrative, like a shmup, basically.
Yeah.
Like a good shmup, really.
It's fucking crazy. It's so cool. So that's the one that really makes Superstar for me. I like all the other levels. I think just playing with that move set, and it's also great co-op, is so fun. And then Revenge of Meta Knight is like, pushes it over the top, and it's just like, this is the coolest shit ever. And I don't have like a full segment here because what happened was like 3 days ago, I was feeling like I hadn't put anything in my media spreadsheet list in 2 weeks. The last thing I finished on this list was Austin Powers and Goldmember.
So how was that? Besides trash.
Not good.
It's not. Nah, they lost the mojo, baby.
They lost the mojo, baby. Because fucking Dr. Evil just... All right, this is a whole other thing. Dr. Evil is just like mugging the whole time. Yeah. Like, he plays it...
I think Austin Dr. Powers Evil...
mugs...
Go ahead.
Austin Powers mugs the whole time in the first movie. Mm-hmm. Fine. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Evil plays it like he plays it pretty straight with him.
Yeah.
But by Goldmember, Dr. Evil is mugging just as much. And then they introduce Goldmember is also mugging constantly. And it's too much.
It's
too much.
Way too self-aware. I think that's what really just became the problem with it. Like, even the second movie has moments where it's just kind of like, all right, you probably could dial it back a bit. But but Goldmember is literally just everybody's got to like have catchphrases or the one-liners, and like they're just barely focusing on actual funny dialogue or following through on good jokes.
Yep. No, the first movie is the best, and then the best Austin Powers media is, of course, the Stern 2002 pinball table.
Of course,
as discussed on the last episode. So I was just feeling fucking fried. You know, country's a nightmare. Everything's bad. Everything's bad. I wasn't doing anything. So I just kind of threw away everything I was in the middle of, because it just wasn't speaking to me. And we started Kirby Return to Dreamland on Dolphin.
Oh, gee. Okay.
Because I've been wanting to play it for a while. So Kirby has had the mainline Kirby games have had the same director for the last like 15 years.
Yeah.
He did the Ultra remake of Superstar on DS. And then they just put him in charge. He took over for Return to Dreamland on Wii, and he just did. He did. His name's Kumazaki.
Yep.
He did Triple Deluxe. He did Planet Robobot. He did Star Allies, and he did Forgotten Land. I haven't played any of these games.
No. Robobot it's is like the one that I know I very specifically need to play. Robobot.
Yeah. Everyone.
People fucking love these games.
Especially, yeah. But Robobot ended up in that place for me where I'm like, as soon as I buy it, they'll make a remaster.
Yeah.
I don't want to play on a tiny DS screen.
Yeah. You can't even get a copy of that now anyway. It's impossible.
Well, I mean, not a new one.
Not eBay, a new one. Usually. And not, you know, you could maybe grab a copy of it.
Zellos informs me that it's surprisingly easy to hack your 3DS. Mm. I've been told.
Gonna have to keep that in mind.
So I'm. Yeah, I have. Thanks to her, I have ways to jump into Triple Deluxe and whatnot. If these continue to be good,
can I hack my 3DS to display on a 1080p monitor?
Yeah, there are. You can buy a capture card for that. Actually.
Oh wait. Huh, I wonder if
that's crazy.
That probably would be difficult, but okay.
I'm just saying that is a thing that I've seen streamers do, though, where they capture it because they got a special little capture card for their 3DS or whatever.
Okay, but don't buy old copies of Emerald online because they might have hacked Mew.
Yeah,
get you shot from orbit by Nintendo.
Yeah, you'd be giving them $50 out of every paycheck for the rest of your life just because they can. And Nintendo sucks.
They fucking they're the devil. Yeah. I fucking
hate Nintendo.
Oh my god. But Kirby Return to Dreamland. So the idea here is like there was a kind of a dark age, I think, for Kirby on like GBA and DS. I liked Canvas Curse. I liked Epic Yarn. I played those around when they came out.
The ones that don't play like normal Kirby. Yeah,
exactly.
The ones that feel like this was probably something else before we put Kirby in it.
Yeah.
I think the guy you mentioned is the director, like the new Kirby's, was designer on Canvas Curse. I think I saw that last night.
I saw specifically that he worked on, they pulled him in and he helped make the final boss, which is a very cool part of Canvas Curse.
Yeah.
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 All right. I was like, okay. I didn't like Nightmare in Dreamland, the remake of Adventure. Mm-hmm. I've only dabbled with Amazing Mirror and I don't want to play it because Kirby Metroidvania sounds bad.
Yeah.
I dabbled in that one and didn't get very far, and I played and beat Squeak Squad of all games.
How'd it treat you?
It's not as good as Superstar. I mean, it was fine.
Yeah, I saw in that one that you combine powers like in 64, right?
I don't even remember, honestly.
Yeah. I don't. Most of those. Look, if other folks enjoy them, I'm speaking out of my ass here. The only one I actually played, I played two that I liked in Nightmare and Dreamland, and then I kind of been looking at the other side eyes, like I don't think I want to play Mass Attack.
I have the Forgotten City or the Forgotten Land.
That's the newest one.
Like I have that one. Like I know that. Like I know that I played the demo of it, and that's why I bought it. Obviously, that and I had
it looks good.
Store credit. You know, so I was just like, all right, nothing else here I want. So I grabbed.
It looks like Kirby. It looks like Kirby 3D World, and I love 3D World.
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. It feels like cool. A Super Mario 3D Worlded Kirby, and that's really like, that's one I want to get to. That's kind of all the Kirby discourse got me looking at that on my Switch again, going, "Hey, maybe it's time."
Yeah, I've been eyeballing. Basically, every time one of those came out, I was like, that actually sounds kind of cool. I have a couple friends that are like Turbo fans that are like, here's all my nuanced opinions on the relative merits of Return to Dreamland, Triple Deluxe, Robobot. Some people that are like, I know everybody loves Robobot the most, but I actually think Triple Deluxe is the best one. And it's like, this is inspiring a lot of passion. People are really invested in these. And then finding out, it's been under the stewardship of this one guy. If this one guy is good at this, then that means there's like 15 years of good Kirby to play.
I didn't know people were this passionate about Kirby, period.
Yeah.
So when that conversation kicked off and I looked back and, you know, I go on lunch break and suddenly it's like, it's still going?
So I started Return to Dreamland. Mm-hmm. Fucking feels great.
Nice.
It's fast. They got movesets out the wazoo. The fighter moveset is 4 pages on the start menu.
Oh my god.
There's grapple attacks, there's midair grapple attacks. There's moves where you go do like Terry's burning upper motion to trigger them.
Breaking what? Down every move. They're telling you what moves have frame advantage.
It's crazy. And they have challenge stages, which are specifically built around certain powers.
Oh, that sounds meaty.
And they're like two or three minutes long. And you get better ranks by getting through the stage without taking damage, by killing every enemy, by doing it in a certain amount of time, by getting all the medals, and all of it requires like using like basically every tool in that particular powers tools toolbox.
Oh, nice.
So I spend like each one of these, I take like 15 minutes and I just learn it cold and execute it. And it feels so good. The challenge run stages are just like actually really good action set pieces. And then the stages themselves are delightful. They're just fun and cute. They're like, make me think of adventure where you're just having a good time running through these gorgeous stages. The backgrounds are really pretty. The music's really good. Mm-hmm. And it's fast, and you got all these cool movesets to play with the whole time. Like, it's easy, but it just feels nice.
It's fine to have an easy game, like, if your easy game just feels good.
Mm-hmm. It's like a celebration for how good platformers can feel.
Yeah, I liken it to, like, Super Crush KO, where I don't think that game is hard, but I think that the way that you utilize your moveset feels really good, and it, you know, carries it. And that's sort of like how, you know, Kirby funny that they both use pink as their driving color.
Both very pink. Both very good music.
Oh god, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great comparison. It's playful and extremely gentle while still obviously being made by somebody that has played a lot of action games and cares about making action games feel good. And this one has an extra mode, and it has a boss arena, and it has a true boss arena.
Lunatic mode.
What's that mean? I don't know. I'm excited to find out.
I think true boss arena is something that he added to Superstar Remat, like Deluxe.
I think, yeah, I remember they added some crazy stuff.
I remember that one. I played Superstar Deluxe and was like, did everything that was in the original game, and then I did True Arena. It was like, this is too fucking hard. Holy shit.
Fuck yeah, man. Fuck yeah. So, there's a voice here that is immediately resonating with me. Mm-hmm. So if it, you know, kind of sticks the landing, keeps me engaged. We're on World 5 right now. Then I'll be really pleased. And that means there's a bunch more Kirby to play. Mm-hmm. Fuck yeah.
Kirby! So,
Kirby.
I'm here for it.
Fuck Nintendo, but, you know,
yeah, Kirby. Fuck Nintendo, but Kirby's always good. We have to separate Sakurai and Kirby from Nintendo because those two things don't seem inherently evil in the same way that Nintendo does.
Sakurai's YouTube channel is so good.
Oh god, that dude's such a well of information with regards to just game design, and the way that he methodically looks at games is just that there's so much to learn there if you just go in, you know. And he's also just a pleasant fucking guy to listen to.
And they're fucking short.
Yep.
Good. Hell yeah. So I'm happy. I'm glad to be back in a Kirby era. I want to go back, and I've never done the boss arena in Superstar, so I want to get back and nail that down. We have a mostly complete save file.
Good stuff.
Rhett.
Hi.
What have you been up to?
Okay. I have two things to talk about, so I'm going to go through the first one. Hopefully not take too long. Okay. I'm still playing Cyberpunk. Mm-hmm. Is the real... I have hit an ending. And then I kept playing.
Uh-huh.
I play a lot of that game, and it's like, it's starting to just, like, make my brain mush of, like, this main storyline is maybe a little confusing, and also, when you spread it out over, like, 40 hours, I'm just like, I don't really know what's going on anymore. But then I hit a point where the game is like, hey, you can start the DLC now, by the way, if you want. Like, this is a good place to do it. So, like, the... what's it called? I forget the name of it, but like there's a whole expansion that came with the version 2.0 of the game.
Yeah.
That was like, hey, It's fixed now. It's good now. The expansion fucking rules. It's like so much better than the main game, which I already thought Hell was yeah. good. That it's just like, oh man, like.
In the what first ways couple, is it better? Like, what's it doing on
the first few hours of it are just like action first person shooter like campaign. Mm-hmm. Like it's just very guided, like moments of a lot of action that's very feels very cool and good, basically. Like this made I'm not sure why this one specifically came up. I think it may be just kind of the dystopian setting. It reminded me of Half-Life.
Cool. I mean, in a good way. Just what I've seen, the little bit that I've seen, because I've watched a few streamers kind of play those bits and pieces of that, and it looked very Half-Life-y to me.
Yeah. Like, for the first couple hours, like, basically you're guarding a female NPC. And I'm like, yep, that's a kind of a... It definitely felt like, oh, it's a redo of episode one.
Yeah.
And just using the character I've built for, like, the previous 40 hours, just, like... being kind of towards the end game of like what I wanted on the skill tree. Like I'm dashing through the air. I'm running up to dudes and just shotgunning them. Like I have like shotgun that when you reload it, the next shot gets electrified and just does like AOE damage. I'm just like, I started getting into the strength skill tree and it's just like, oh yeah, shotguns will now like have like 40% gib chance. And it's just like you shoot dudes and then like every once in a while it just says obliterated.
Yes!
Like and like all the limbs go flying off. Like the level of violence in this game is extremely high. It's crazy.
Makes
like
me happy.
I feel like first person shooters really have veered extremely hard towards just being a multiplayer thing in the last like couple decades.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's good playing a single player game that's just like, hey, you shoot dudes and limbs go flying.
They go flying. Take me back to my Soldier of Fortune days on PC. Yeah.
I just haven't played something like this since like The Last Wolfenstein, which was
you played Doom.
Oh right, Doom. Yeah, Doom Eternal would
be. Doom Eternal is absolutely in that level. Okay,
yeah,
of
definitely,
like,
definitely.
Yeah, we're giving shit.
That Doom Eternal feels so weird because that's like a fucking DMC first person shooter.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. 2016 is definitely
seems like, crazy.
So first few hours of the expansion rule, then you kind of go back into the open world, and it's you know it slows down to actually you know have the story parts. But I think what I liked about the expansion is that. It really focuses the narrative more on like these five new characters, and it's just a lot easier to follow for me, especially because like once you're kind of locked into like doing it, it's like, hey, I'm not being distracted by the main game area. Also, it takes place in a pretty small district, so it's just it's very tight and compartmentalized, and like
kind of gives the story you Edgerunners vibes in a way.
I don't know about that. I mean, there's
in terms of
parts. There's one story narrative that when they mentioned it, I thought of Edgerunners, and I went, oh, fuck. Uh-oh. You know things are going to go to shit when they're like, hey, let's leave the city. Uh-oh. So to extremely, extremely simply summarize it, because also the expansion has some choices that you make that actually affect how the story goes. Mm-hmm. So to massively oversimplify it, how far would you go to protect a cute robot girl?
Oh, there's, dude, no limits.
Very far, very far, very
no
far.
No limits whatsoever. Boy. Is there a
and
feeling worth being incinerated over?
Yes. How my playthrough went is that I thought 100% there is no limit. And then 99% of the way to the end, the very final choice, I went, hold on.
No!
Hold on, I can't do that. No, no, just... Oh, God, like, you get a big choice, basically, like, which character you're going to betray a few hours from the end. And then it just, it goes back into, like... extremely tight cinematic cinematic FPS mode. Like it goes go mode, like Trails go mode, and like
the good stuff.
It's extremely good, and like not just like extremely good action, but like a drive through the rain while characters are talking, and like just very emotionally and cinematic, and like but also you choosing the dialogue that's being spoken for your main character, and like directing how the conversation goes, just like oh, just very painful moments at times.
Oh, it's so good.
And then, like, the stress of trying to do a stealth section in an airport.
Oh my god!
Like this
This is all cyberpunk.
This is cyberpunk.
This is crazy.
And then,
I guess it's the Witcher 3 guys.
Anybody's gonna go this pussy out, it's absolutely fucking.
The expansion made me go, yes. Oh right, this is the Witcher 3 developer, where the main game hadn't really hit that for me yet. Because also the expansion has way less needless side content. Like, it's still there, but they don't fuck it. I mean, what I found out is that Witcher 3 has, like, points of interest that you would get advised to disable by the community early on, because there's just too many and they're not interesting. Apparently there's a version of Cyberpunk that you're supposed to disable early on. Just, like, open the map, turn off gigs, you'll be happier. Because then there'll be things you run into naturally and not...
A big checklist. Yeah.
Because then when you try to checklist them, you go, this is kind of boring.
Yeah.
Anyways, but then the gigs in the DLC, there's like 10 of them total. And it's like, oh, these are actual like meaningful quests now. So like the quality of content is definitely better because they don't feel the need to pad it out extremely.
Yeah.
Good.
But yeah, I thought... after the big choice in the expansion that, like, this is leading to an ending, my character is probably not making it out of this alive. And then you get to the second choice, and I'm just like, oh, Jesus Christ. Save game, make my choice, and then credits roll. I think the game is over. And then it goes to several days later, you're back in Night City. Somehow, your character made it out alive.
Somehow, Rhett's character returned.
I mean, it doesn't... It is not the stretch that fucking Palpatine thing was. But it's like, oh, okay, the game isn't actually over. And I get a text message like, hey, about that thing we talked about, I'll call you in a few days. And I think it's kind of bullshitting me. Mm-hmm. And then a few days in-game time or later, that character calls me and then... it gives me the option to get an actual like end of game ending, and I'm like, oh, okay. So like on top of the expansion ending, what my actions in the expansion led to an ending for the actual main game.
Oh my Christ.
Which was like an hour long with no combat, and it was just depressing as fuck. Like, I don't think there's a happy ending in this game.
It's my kind of game.
Yeah. And then I loaded and looked at the other ending to the DLC, and it was, like, not as pleased with that one. So I'm like, okay, I guess this is my main canon ending now. But then it's like, so I feel satisfied, but it's like, I haven't actually finished the original main campaign.
Oh.
So I'm going through that now. And it's like, I don't think this is going to hit as hard as the expansion, but I am curious. But it's also like, I've got a quest log of like 30 side quests. I'm like, fucking can't right now. I'm what does Steam say? What does the Steam say? Playtime 93.4 hours.
Woo! How much of that is just idling and watching VTubers though?
Playtime 83.4 hours. it's a big one, trust me.
Yeah, it's a big boy.
Like, even if I think you mainline it pretty hard, like 20 hours for the main game and the expansion probably each.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you do all the side quests, maybe never ending.
Never ending.
That's a lot of cyberpunk.
Yeah. I did hit another point of no return save file that it warned me about before something in the main story. So I'm like, oh, okay, I was closer than I thought. There's a chance I'm done after this weekend.
All right.
But I think the main game has 3 different endings. I'm going to see how many I can get, and then I'm going to go back to the expansion and then betray the robot girl.
No!
See where that goes. It'd be funny if you pick it and it just goes, you're a monster, and the game ends. There's actually no content behind
fucking that. BioShock endings. All they wanted was compassion. You showed them violence. Get out of here. Shut up.
Yeah, this is definitely like getting an ending past like an hour past the expansion that was like an hour long of dialogue and a lot of choices and just bad feelings. Mm-hmm. Just the total opposite of whatever BioShock did.
Just turns into a visual novel at the end. That's my kind of video game.
A 30-second ending.
Oh my god, the BioShock endings are really lame.
Ugh, they're so bad. And they were like, oh, you're gonna feel the weight of your actions when you get to the end. God. It's like, nah, I'm all right.
I think one thing that's interesting about Cyberpunk, and I think Witcher 3 basically does this too, is that it doesn't have like overt like karma up, karma down.
Right.
Like it, and Witcher 3 has an ending where depending on how a character likes you, you can just get the bad ending out of nowhere. And people are mad about that, but I think it is interesting that it doesn't warn you.
That's I like emergent gameplay like that. So
yeah. It's tricky because I think the main game does kind of have like these quests are always going to go one way and your player actions don't affect it that much, which doesn't feel great.
Mm.
I did glance that Johnny Silverhand is the character that Keanu Reeves plays in this. And how he likes you can determine the ending.
Well, of course you want to be liked by Keanu Reeves. Like, why would you not want? I think that one could, like, you know, base an entire campaign about just being liked by Keanu Reeves.
100%. I just thought it was funny. Like, oh, he's the equivalent of your daughter in Witcher 3.
My beautiful Keanu daughter.
Because in Witcher 3, if Ciri likes you or not, determines the ending. I thought that was funny. Right.
It's so funny. I read the first two Witcher books. And like they introduce his daughter at like the last two stories. So like the last like 5% of those books. And I was immediately like 10 times more invested. I wasn't the rest of it.
She's not even in the first two Witcher games, which is the funny thing.
Oh, God.
But then she's the main character of three.
Good. Yeah, sounds good. Thing is
Geralt.
Sounds like a good way to do it.
A funny thing that happened. This is taking a little longer. Funny thing that happens at the start of the expansion is that Keanu Reeves' character very obviously goes away for a while. I thought, oh, that makes sense. He's probably expensive.
They're going to do the Voss thing again with Far Cry 3, where Voss just disappears after the first third. Like
but then after like the cinematic 2 hours or so Half-Life part, he just comes back. And I'm like, oh, okay, you did get a bunch of new VA for this.
The Kiefer Sutherland effect of
it's Metal definitely Yourself. Not that. It's a funny thing. One of the main characters in the DLC is also like a famous actor, Idris Elba, I think.
Oh, Idris Elba. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Badass.
He's like the other main character in the expansion. I'm like, oh, wow.
That's pretty cool.
I didn't look up anybody else. Yeah. They probably spend on their voice actors.
Oh, I don't doubt that they are the ones that are going to cough up the big bucks to give Keanu Reeves as much time as they want him. Like, if anybody can do it, it's CD Projekt Red.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, it's really weird that that game actually is good.
Yeah, like,
After all this time.
I didn't care about that game for the longest time. Even when 2.0 came out, did not give a shit. And then I watched Cyberpunk Edgerunners and was like, man, I think I really need to play that game. And I know that game and anime are not intrinsically, you know, tied to one another at all. It's just, oh, I like the vibe here. This is doing something very cool that I want a whole bunch of.
There are moments in this game where I just won't take the fast travel because, you know, let's just drive for a bit and soak in the vibe.
Yeah.
But at this point, also, I'm trying to fucking finish it.
Yeah. You kind of reach that point. That
part kind of decreases it once you're 80 hours in.
Yeah.
I think, the real selling point against it for Pauly is that it's so fucking big. I think you can, I don't know if this would really work, but there is some option to just pick a new character that's like level 40 to start the expansion straight out.
Yeah, I kind of figured they would do something like that.
Because they did that for Witcher 3 as well. Yeah. Like, hey, if you just want to play Blood and Wine. So besides the game that never ends, I watched an anime.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we talked about anime. I hope it's not Ave Mujica.
No, it's not. I watched ReZero Season 3.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
All right.
Fill us in.
Settle in. Let's go.
No, that's not, and it was kind of ass. That's not what I'm here to talk about.
No. Brutal.
So I watched Orb on the Movements of the Earth. Okay. This is a show that nobody has known about.
I've literally never heard of this.
It's very quietly becoming like this cult classic. Not, but like everybody that has seen it is like, guys, you got to watch this show. Mm-hmm. And like, it's very not anime in the way that she thinks of, like, you know, colorful and like bombastic. It is. Okay, so let's say what this is. Mm-hmm. It's a story set in the 15th century, which I think would be the actual like 1400s.
Yeah.
It's a long time ago. It's in Europe. It's about characters that are studying heliocentrism, which is the idea that the Earth revolves around the sun, which is obviously now we know the truth. But at the time, the prevailing theory was geocentrism, that the Earth is the center of the universe and the stars rotate around us.
Yeah.
And because it's the 14th century, the church has a lot of power. They can just kind of brand people heretics if they feel like it, or women as witches.
Going right on my watch list right now. I'm literally on AnnieDB right now. Set as planning. Boom.
So I got derailed like 2 minutes into the show because I recognized a voice actor. There's this voice actor. I sent you guys an image just to visualize some of the characters that he's played. Tsuda Kenjiro. He's got this very deep, husky voice.
This guy's I know his range.
I mean, he's in a lot of the big modern shonen shows, which means you guys wouldn't have seen them. But he's either always playing like the veteran who's seen some shit and is just kind of tired of the game and maybe comes back for one last mission. Or he's playing like the craziest motherfucker out of all the villains.
Yeah, like you look at his Fire Force character and his Chainsaw Man character and you immediately get that dichotomy.
Yeah. Like, the character you don't want to mess with. There's one show where because he was the voice actor, I immediately went, you're the twist villain at the end. And I was correct. Like, I go, no, you're not. I know the type of character you voice. You're the villain. Also, you've got a big scar. Also, like almost all these characters have scars. Also, he's in Way of the House Husband as an ex-Yakuza guy. And the joke in that is that he was the biggest badass, and now he's married and just wants to live a house.
Just wants to be a husband.
But, like, they got him to voice it because it's so funny that it's him.
Like, that's top-notch casting there.
Mm-hmm. So, back to Orb. Mm-hmm. You meet his character 2 minutes in or something, and he plays an Inquisitor.
Let's go.
So for these characters that end up studying heliocentrism, this is the scariest dude you could meet.
Yeah.
And they just they fully explore his character and his devotion to church, God.
Oh God.
And his desire to purge heretics.
Oh, this is I'm literally going to start watching this tonight.
Cool. I haven't felt this way about an anime in a long time.
Like,
goddamn.
Like from the new world kind of thing, Shinsekai Yori kind of. That's kind of like the vibe I get hearing
That's like putting it as like a top of all time. I'm not sure if I would go that far. There are moments where I'm just like, is this show as good as I think it is? And then, like, the next episode is like, yeah, it is. Like, it's a heavily philosophical show. Mm-hmm. Like, despite the premise, it's not as much, like, into the science stuff as you think it would be. There's a few moments where they get into a little bit of nitty-gritty, but it's really just a show about faith, about
71% torture.
There's a lot of torture.
Yeah, that's what
there's a good amount of torture.
71% torture.
So. That's a funny percentage.
That's a good amount of torture, I think. 71%. It's pretty solid.
There is one part where I took a break for a few days because I knew the next episode was gonna be bad. Yeah, I don't really want to spoil it, but it's it's one of those shows that comes out and just feels like an instant classic.
And, cool.
And also throws arms up in the air. It's a complete manga adaptation.
Complete!
It's done in 25 episodes.
You are saying literally everything you need to say to get me to watch an anime. There's literally every configuration, like every word, you had to have planned this out.
I kind of did. But the show kind of sells itself once you know it and watch a little. Also, the 3-episode rule on this one is stunningly strong. But yeah, I started watching it just because it had like extremely high reviews, mm-hmm. and everyone, like not everyone was gushing about it, but enough trusted voices were gushing about it that yeah. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. I'll check it out. And then I look up the manga, I go, 8 volumes. So if it's like 3 episodes per volume, oh, they finish it. It's done.
It's so rare. That is so rare.
Uh-huh.
They don't fucking season 2 you by doing 12 episodes.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, they just went and did the whole thing.
That's unheard of. That's like one of those things where it's like, oh, I feel like you're like, I know that everything is for profit. Like, all of these companies want to make money doing this. But I also go, man, you made this because there was a passion there. You know, it's like it's like the Rock and Go show where you made this and this probably not going to make any money, but there's a passion here.
Yeah, I think that one would be pretty close in terms of like, an anime that just immediately catches you off guard by being something so different from what you've watched in the past.
Oh, I'm so ready. Like, I'm so ready. Yeah. I'm so excited. I've been so anime dead since Ave Mujica took my expectations and suplexed them through a table. I've never seen an anime shit the bed so bad. and I wanted to like it so much.
I know, I think you want to like it more than me, and that's why you got hurt so bad.
Yeah, look, I never grew out of my teenage goth phase, so I loved the whole, like, idea of Ave Mujica and what they were trying to do with that, and I was thinking, oh, they're going to take this whole idea and play around with what that means, like, for their real lives as well as the band, and then it's just like, nah, it's just going to be real stupid because the director has a hard-on for one character and wanted to center the whole thing around her, and she's not the main character.
Yeah, that was a weird show.
But I've been so done with, like, I've not watched anything. Like, I took everything off my to-watch list, you know?
Oh, no.
Mujica killed anime.
I'm telling you, Ave Mujica hurt me.
Jesus.
This is like when the Cubs killing Cole alive.
So what did you say, John? Worse than the Cubs killing Cole alive.
Oh,
yeah. Red said this is like reading Umineko, and I said this is worse than the Cubs killing Cole alive. They're both good.
So yeah, like I've not been excited to watch a new anime in a while. So now I'm just like,
I hope you like it.
You found my shit. Yeah. This sounds like it's entirely my shit.
It's one of those things where it's weird because it didn't have to be an anime. There's nothing about the story that
required it.
Like, it just could have been live action.
Man, it's maybe the same with things like Liz and the Bluebird. Like, you could tell that with live action people. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the things that you don't think maybe need to be an anime can be some of the best.
Yeah. I swear, if this blows up in like 5 years, we actually will see a live action Netflix adaptation. And I think of all the things they do, it would work the most because it's just, hey,
it's so build grounded. Some old looking
sets. Yeah, just, it's 1940s.
Yeah.
Not 1940s, 1400s. Just, yeah.
Damn.
That's right, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, this sounds great. I'm so, like, I've got a tingle, Rhett. I've got a tingle. I'm so excited to, like, go watch this.
I was watching, like, the first couple episodes, and I felt the tingle of, like, oh man, like, I heard this was peak, but you weren't fucking kidding.
Yeah, found the gold dust.
It's funny. So, like, the timeline of this was, like, I finished it, opened my anime list for the first time in, like, 3 weeks, and just slapped a 10 on it, because I was like, yeah, I'll update one last time just to give this...
Sometimes a show deserves it.
A little extra.
So, wait, are you both on Analyst now?
Yeah, I'm on Analyst DB,
Nice. Yeah. Were you able to export all your easily. Export your mail stuff
easily? Yes. They have a tool that'll help you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Oh, this is a lot cleaner in presentation than Mal is.
Yeah, I'm on analyst.co, I believe. Yeah.
Yep, that's what I'm looking at.
Yep. It's real good. I like it a lot.
Number one is Fire Run, better than fucking FMA Brotherhood being.
Yeah, I think Fire Run is number one on Mal too now.
Oh, wow. Like,
I think that era is over.
Yeah.
Kaguya-sama Ultra Romantic also higher on this site than FMA.
Nice.
Brotherhood.
Ultra Romantic is real good.
Okay, Brotherhood is number two on Mal after Fire Run.
Of course it is. And it's going to return number one before too long.
It's got Kaguya-sama. It's
didn't take long.
9.3 versus 9.1. Like, it's actually pretty far behind.
That's actually like a two, like a 0.2 is pretty significant on Mal.
Yeah. Anyways. So yeah, I finished the show, cried for like 5 minutes, gave it a 10. And then the next day, one of my favorite VTubers, and not someone in Hololive, by the way, actual VTuber.
Oh, an actual VTuber, not unlike those Hololive sluts.
Unlike those Corpo bitches. Does like an anime recommendation stream, but then like a significant portion of it was, hey, you guys need to watch Orb.
Watch Orb!
I thought that was such funny timing, because it was like, okay, if I hadn't watched this show, now I would have, because I'm being recommended it again. Like, it was going to end up in my
orbit. Because you're easily swayed by the opinions of VTubers.
But she was really gushing for it, like, in the way that I am now.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
That's not the first time I've ever heard Rhett say she was really gushing for it, either. I hear Rhett say that on a daily basis.
Boy, I did the orbit pun and nobody said anything.
I didn't even catch it.
It's a show about planetary movement, goddammit.
Okay. Orbit.
That's what I've been up to.
Orbit.
Beautiful.
Blueprint. Blueprints. 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 I'm just trying to make sure that everybody else caught that. I understood it from the get-go. I'm just making sure everybody else got it.
I saw you guys explaining that before I even knew what Blueprints was.
Hey, Rhett, I missed Rhett Anime Hour on podcast.
Yeah. And you come back with a banger, too.
I wasn't going to come here and be like, I watched ReZero Season 3. It was kind of mid. I watched Kimi no Todoke Seasons 1 through 3. They were fine. Like, I'm only here for the bangers.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Oh. In that same VTuber podcast, that apparently they were also told ReZero Season 3 is ass.
Fuck, that's funny.
And that was the first time I was like, oh, does the community not like it? Am I just not?
Like, the large consensus that I've seen on people that I follow watch it has been pretty down on it.
Okay, I was like, I don't know if I'm the anomaly here, because I fucking loved Season 1 and, like, really liked Season 2. And then Season 3 gets rid of the fucking time loop.
What? The whole thing that makes that show unique.
It's not gone, but it doesn't happen for, like, 13 episodes in a row towards the end. They just win. Oh. There's no nuance to the victory.
That's crazy.
They just give this one to Subaru for free.
Somehow, Subaru just won.
Well, of all shows to be like, somehow Subaru came back to life.
That would make sense.
Once.
Anyway's good.
Okay. Polly.
Yo! I've not actually played a lot of games. I did play some games, though, that I will talk about here for a moment, just because we got time. We got a couple minutes. Like, I've not felt like getting into anything new, and, like, the world's falling apart around us. Like,
it's very bad.
It's real bad. And I think that it's in those moments where you need to, like, grab your comfort media, huddle close with it, and just give it the warmest hug ever, just because that's the thing that's going to be there to carry you through. So I went back and I did a complete run through of Labyrinth of Toho 2 again. Labyrinth of Toho.
Fuck yeah.
Gensokyo and the Heaven Piercing Tree. Still one of my favorite dungeon crawlers ever. Like, it still hits just as good now as it did when I was puzzling everything out the first time I played it. And even now, like I've played through that game like three times now, and I like had three completely different team compositions and how I had to approach things and work my way around and finding new ways to blow bosses out that I had never done before. And that shit's just fun. The fact that, like, it's very Etrian in that way where it's like, well, I've not done this composition or played this class before. You can do a lot of that in Labyrinth of Toho too, and since it's very generous with your respecking, you know, you can always just like, all right, well, this isn't quite working out, so I can just grab somebody else and throw them in there, and you don't lose anything for it. And so it still retains its teeth. So I played through that again, had a wonderful, wonderful time. And then coincidence of all coincidences is that the Labyrinth of Toho Tri demo.
This one looks so pretty.
It hit Patreon and they were like, well, it's gonna be on Steam in a couple of weeks or so. Mm-hmm. But I'm just like, no, man, the world's still blowing up. I still feel terrible about it. I just finished Labyrinth of Toho 2. I'll give you $5 and give me that Patreon demo. Not to mention that the guy that does these translations, he does basically Toho translations for a living, and he's actually working with the developer of Labyrinth of Toho Tri to to just make sure that, like, Labyrinth of Toho Tri comes out day and date, you know, in Japanese and English, and that game is doing a lot of good so far. There are things that I do have questions about, but it's just like, maybe it's just early game and these systems aren't feeling 100% yet. I feel like they took away a little bit of player expression, because, like, again, like, if you know how to play Labyrinth of Toho 2, you can melt things down real fast, and they give you the freedom to do that. And I feel like this game is kind of cinching that up a little bit, taking a little bit of that freedom away to kind of try for something a little more tactical to remain, you know, to make sure that it still has its teeth. And I don't know how that's going to land yet, but I'm still thinking that, like, yeah, this is solid. Like, this is still, it's really freaking flashy.
Good.
Yeah. Like, I've never seen a game with menus this, like, here's particle effects coming out of every corner of the screen. Like, Jesus, did you, like, you can hear your GPU just squealing.
It's so pretty, Polly.
Yeah, these clips you showed
look so nice.
So pretty. Like, it's just like, man, like, again, maybe a little overdone, but I like it. I'm still very excited for this game. I don't know what the status is yet. I know that the demo is out on Steam now, so anybody that wants to play Labyrinth of Toho Tri could give it a go, which I wholeheartedly recommend. What do you got to lose? It's like it's a fucking 5-floor demo, which is literally 1/4 of the game. So just giving that away. I only played the first 2.5 floors, though, and I'm going to not touch it anymore until the game is out proper, but I'm really excited for it. I'm ready to, like, throw more Tohos at each other and have some fun boss fights that make me want to scream, and then I'll come back years later and be like, yeah, I know how to do this, and feel like a big badass. So, yeah.
I'm only going to play the first floor of the demo. I'll play the second floor.
I'll just play the second floor. And then I get like a third or halfway through the third floor, and I was like, this isn't going to end. I need to I need to uninstall this. So I uninstalled it. I did install the Steam version just because it's updated a bit, and you have to start all over. So, you know, I might look at those first two floors again just to see, like, what they've tightened up in a couple of weeks. But it's doing all the right things. It's surfacing all the right information. A lot of cool shit about, like, how attacks work. Like, just telling you directly, yeah, like, this does 115% of your attack stat versus 50% of the enemy's mind. And here's how the elements are playing with it. You can literally just suss out everything now. You don't need a wiki to do it anymore.
Oh, nice.
But yeah,
I think that kind of transparency is really cool.
I think that's rad because I cannot think of another time that I've seen, like, the stats get and attack formulas and stuff get surfaced like they're going for in this game. It's really wild. Like, they will even give you, like, the boss patterns if you want them. You can turn those off because I don't want to know all that stuff. Like, I want to, like, get hit with a comet in the face on the fifth round because I didn't see it coming. Like, and now I want to figure out how to fix that. But yeah.
Yeah. I think transparency and data can be good, but yeah, what the boss is going to do does feel
that's
like
a little much
too far.
Yeah.
Especially it's going real far, but it, like, It speaks to a lot of confidence in your systems,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
That you're like happy to release, to share that information for like challenge. It's like when you watch, like, there's an FF6 challenge runner I'll watch on YouTube called Locked Kirby 2. And the way that he just unpacks all these crazy attack patterns for Final Fantasy 6 and 7.
Yeah, the boss scripts in that game are crazier than you think.
And you never see it because it's all hidden behind like the ATB, and you don't see most of like the reactions or whatnot. Getting parsing that stuff is really interesting, and just happily giving players the tools to do that speaks to a confidence in your in your game, and it also speaks to like you're making a game specifically not just for you're making a game for the casual players and also for the real perverts.
Yeah, the people that want to get in there. It's like, yes, how? Like, give me
the guts.
Tell me what percentage of the defense stat is being used here. So, yeah, like, I'm excited. Like, I think I have no doubt that this is going to be good. I know that LOT2 obviously has a lot, you know, just... I don't want to compare the two because I know that LOT2 is an all-timer for me. Like, I play that game and it's just immediate happy place. Also, my copy of Lunar Remaster Collection came in and I'm so excited to get to that. I cannot wait.
Nice.
I just had to mention that because, like, I wasn't sure I was going to be able to get
it. It looks nice. It looks so nice.
It really does. And I fired it up a little bit just before we started recording, and like, I got to that opening theme of the first game again. I felt it immediately. It's like, oh, you're taking me back. I need this. This is what I need. This is what I have to do now. So yeah, that'll probably be my next long-term game.
I want to play it. Yeah. I want to play Lunar 2.
Oh, Eternal Blue 2 is so good. Eternal Blue is amazing. But so I didn't do much other than kind of just revisiting Labyrinth of Toho 2 and playing the demo for 3. But in the last couple of weeks, I'll tell you what I have done. I've gotten hella back into game dev.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, fuck buddy. Yeah. I started a project like August or September of last year, and I kind of just fizzled out on it because I felt like I was running up against a wall. I was like, well, there's stuff here. I like what this is doing, but is this substantial enough? Can I carry this to a finish line that makes sense? And I got stuck there for a bit, and then November happened, and then I didn't want to do nothing for like 8 years. It's a follow-up to a game that I released a couple of years ago called Synchronize. But this is like, I don't know that I'd call it a sequel. I would say it's just kind of like taking a lot of the same aesthetic and ideas and reworking it in a way. Yet you don't have to control two player objects at the same time this time around, people. But it's called Synchro Dash. And the idea is that once you start moving, you can never stop moving. And you collect red or blue smiley boys, and you have to be, and you have a button to change color like Ikaruga. So if you want a good analog for what this is, you know, until I finish mine, go play Rhett's game Bullet Maze. It's very much this idea, just kind of like reworked in a smaller scale in a little different way,
and much faster.
But I don't even know what it was, but like something just made me crack open Game Maker a couple weeks ago, and it was like, man, this game is really cool, because I'd not touched it in like 6 or 8 months. I just kind of let it sit, and then I played what I had already done again, and I was like, no, I really like this. And like, what if I did this one dumb thing, and then I just literally made a new gimmick that can totally turn the game on its head, and it's literally was just drawing a straight line. It was like, wait a minute, I can do a lot with this now. So Synchro Dash is like my next big game dev project that I'm kind of working on. It's I think it's about 35 to 40% finished. I just kind of sent what I'm calling like a milestone demo to
a vertical slice.
It's a vertical slice. It's about 35-40% of the game. But I'm really excited to get back to it. I'm just kind of taking a few days, maybe a week or so away, to kind of let all of it sink in, come back, feel refreshed. And then it's like, sure, you're not going to touch Game Maker at all in the meantime, right? That's how that goes.
Yeah,
totally. That did not work because I also just finished making a game in about a day.
Fuck yeah.
I have a new game that... this podcast will go up probably like 2 hours before the new game comes out. The new game that I made is a cute little Toho fan game called Yomu Yomu Ball. And it's just a cute little game where you bounce yin-yang orbs around the screen and try to keep them in the air. And there's just a focus on doing that fast, being accurate. Just things that I like focusing on. When I make games, I like games that just kind of like feel like there is an element of precision to them. And it's sort of like explains why like the attack is the way it is in Yomu Yomu Ball. But I started making this game out of spite. It's a good motivator. I started making it with, you know, not the best intentions in mind. But then it was like, maybe there's actually something here, though. And so I took an element out and I started playing around with just like throwing the ball around and just having Yomu bounce the ball off the walls and stuff. And it was like, wait a minute, this actually, I could do stuff with this. I could do something various. I could absolutely go balls out with this idea because there are ideas that I did not implement that I had that I know would work.
Feels good to not go balls out.
Exactly.
Feels good to feels good game, to play it chill.
It is a game that is about balls that does not go balls out. But some might argue that it would. But yeah, Yomu Yomu Ball will be out probably like Monday at around noon. So this will go up, like I said, about a couple hours before that. But it's just been... It feels real weird when you get that moment of like being inspired and feeling the drive again. It's just like, I've not... felt it in so long, and it's just like I did not realize how starved I was to be, you know, creating things. So like when I put down the demo that I sent out for Synchro Dash to everybody, it was just like, but I just kind of want to do something. I know I'm gonna make this funny joke thing and make John laugh, and that'll be
succeeded.
And then, like, I made John laugh, I did the funny thing, and then I kept playing with the funny thing, and was like, what if I do something with this? And then I was like, well, what if I take the spite part out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, yeah. Like, and now I've got this really cute little score attack game that I'm just really happy with. It came together in literally 24 hours. That feels good, man.
Like last year, I started doing some Glorious Trainwreck stuff. Yes. Where like I specifically was like, let's come up with a random theme and make a little RPG Maker thing. And then I started using Glorious Trainwrecks for like a space for making just like tiny Love 2D sketches, because making games from scratch in the framework like Love 2D is really hard, and I'm trying to figure it out. And I polished one off from last December a couple weeks ago. Felt really good. Mm-hmm. It's fun to make little itty bitty action games that are even itty bittier than like the kinds we make. Because itty bitty action games from the correct POV that ASDF2 is a large work.
Yeah,
it is a large project.
Like, Numlock would qualify as like I think that's Glorious Trainwreck's core as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's very nice to have a bit of freedom to kind of approach things, because like we follow a bunch of artists online that will sketch something out in 2 hours and post it on Twitter or not Twitter anymore, on social media. And it's really nice. It makes me happy to see it. I think there's no reason that games need to be different on that front.
Sure. Absolutely. And it's definitely inspired me. Like, there were so many parts of me that were like, no, I could blow this out into something bigger. I could make this bigger. I could add more mechanics. I know that I can. But I was like, no, just pull back. Like, let it be the thing. Like, let this breathe on its own. It doesn't need to be something bigger. And that's the thing that, like, you know, like, I'm going to post it on Glorious Trainwrecks when it comes out. Because it was like, I want to kind of, like, try this. Like, get in there and make little games that are just, like, a simple little thing. And I just found out from making my own very simple little thing that's even simpler than most of the stuff that I make, because most of my games are dead simple. I think that this is maybe one of the most dead simplest, but it's just like, oh, but just like play with that idea, tighten it up, give it like that tune it to the level of game feel that I like personally, and suddenly like it's just a neat little thing that didn't need to be, you know, some months long project. I banged it out in 24 hours, but and it feels real good.
Fuck yeah. What do you need?
Exactly.
That's awesome, Polly. Yeah. That's so dope.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to be back to developing games again. That just feels really nice. Because I it just felt so dead for so long. It's just like, am I ever going to catch that wave again? Like, am I too depressed, you know, over everything that's happening now to be able to be creative in a way that I miss being creative? And then when I opened Game Maker again and played that Synchro Dash demo, it was like, no, man, I got something here. I got it. Mm-hmm. I got it. And then I just grabbed it and like, I didn't immediately want to start just making levels or something, but I just made the menu. Made the main menu and stuff.
Do something. Like, just get in there and do something.
And that kept me going.
I was dead on creative stuff for 2 months. Mm-hmm. And then getting back into it felt so good.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so easy to get it up in your head and just make this stuff so much harder than it needs to be. Yeah. But if you can just get in there and have fun with it, mm-hmm. find whatever it needs to be that you can have fun with it. Mm-hmm. It can just be a balm when times are hard, I think.
Yeah, like it's been in like the last 2 weeks, I feel like I've been, you know, just overall like happier than I've been in freaking months. And I know that it's because, mm-hmm. you know, I get home and I get to open Game Maker and I get to start putting more things into this little present that I want to give to the world in a few months, you know, and that feels great. Like, and I don't know when Synchro Dash will be finished. You know, it may stall out again at some point, and I'm open to that. It's fine. But I know that, like, but the identity of what I'm doing with this thing is strong enough to know that it's like, yes, this is worth finishing, and I know that I will because I am very attached to it now.
Cool.
Yeah. When are we going to get Rhett making games again, though? Like, when? Like, Rhett, like, did Hunters. And, like, yeah, Hunters is fantastic. Like, if that's your last game, brother,
it wasn't the last game, though.
No, okay,
wasn't.
To be clear.
Bullet Phase, Bullet and I think Super Salixer were after.
Super Salixer. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I worked on Poly Dungeon.
Yeah, you worked on Poly Dungeon, too.
Poly Clicker was also
Poly Clicker.
My true
swan song. Yeah,
but like, man, in terms of escalation and going bigger and bigger, there's no going bigger than Hunters at this point. I'm sorry. Yes,
correct.
Yeah, but I would love to see like more short form like Rhett stuff. Like, it's like Zalixer and Super Zalixer are literally why Synchronize happened, because like I liked that idea so much and I was so good at it. It was just like, well, I want to make a game that's like that, but like, play with it in a different way. Not everybody's cup of tea, obviously, but for me, it was like, oh, I made a thing for me, and it's awesome. And it was inspired by this cool thing my friend made. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Like, yeah. I want more Red games!
It's so hard, because Red, you got so deep on Flash 4.
Yeah, like, that's what it was. Is that
you nailed that.
Anything else. Also, Flash was insanely slow.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, I remember scrolling in Hunters took literally years. And then John was messing around with like one of the top down games and just clicked a button to enable scrolling.
Yeah, there's literally a button that's like, hey, follow this object in the room and use these borders to control the scrolling.
Hey, for what it's worth, Rhett, it's gotten a lot harder again. Moving from Game Maker to Love, suddenly scrolling is harder.
Yeah. I'm probably married to Game Maker for the rest of my dev career, just because I know this environment now. I feel like I'm only getting better at it, mm-hmm. and I feel like trying to learn something from scratch would make me feel actively bad.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, it was just so funny where for years I was like doing all this math to move every single object by the correct amount of pixels, oh, move the background, insane. Move the hitboxes, so keep it funny. All in sync so you don't go flying through the wall. And then John just clicked a button.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going, oh, that was ants, because you told me, hey, the flick scrolling in this kind of feels bad. And I was like, let me try with scrolling, and I sent you a new thing in like 10 minutes.
Wait a minute.
I was like, what?
What? No.
Oh, man. Yeah. But yeah, game dev is fun. Like, I'd love to see Rhett come back, but I know Rhett's also just a super busy boy these days, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I have enjoyed experimenting with, I've been jumping around different tools forever because mm-hmm. I like feeling that my ability to express myself in games is not locked to a specific environment. It's been hard getting there, but yeah, I think I'm getting there.
Yeah, I really love like what you did with the bear tank game. Like, I was just like, oh,
thank man. You.
I would like that. Like, man, if I could do that. If I could do that, I would want to play with that if I could.
It's a lot easier in Game Maker. It's a lot easier in Game Maker to make the screen spin around. Yeah. It was really hard.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can just like viewport, like move stuff like that.
That was like a 6 or 7 hour project in Game Maker, squeezed into 30 hours for Love TV.
Yeah, Bear Tank is fun as shit, though. I like that game a lot. But yeah, game dev is fun. I'm happy to be back. I understand that there may be more bumps in the road down the line, but I am going to ride this wave.
It's a process.
Yeah, I'm going to ride this wave as long as I can and enjoy the happiness that it is bringing me now. I am, and I know that like I am in a much better place mentally than I have been in months, largely due to these past 2 weeks. So if anything, like that in it of itself has made this whole process worth it.
Fabulous.
Beautiful.
So that's the show. I want to thank you all, of course, for tuning in once again. And we, of course, want to thank you again, once again, for 20 whole damn years of sticking with us and for some reason still liking what we do and liking being around a bunch of gigantic dorks like us. But before we get out of here, John Thayer, where can the internet folks at home, where can they find you?
Farawaytimes.itch.io and farawaytimes.com.
And Rhett!
I realized I'm going to plug a different website every single time. Okay. I am now on analyst.co/user/Rhett.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you can find me similarly on analyst.co. I'm what? Am I Polly Plushy there or am I just... I don't remember. I think I'm Polly.
You're Polly Plushy.
Yeah, I'm Polly Plushy everywhere these days, which that's, you know, nice having all that stuff squared away. And all the branding, it's working. I'm going to watch
Orb Knight. I got that No Idol banner on there.
Yeah, still love that banner. I'm going to watch Orb tonight, and I will probably talk about it the next time. I'm going to go play Lunar. Nice. Man, I'm going to go make games. I'm going to release a video game. I'm going to work up. Man! What an exciting time to be alive. What an exciting time to be alive.
It's nice having things that you want to do, and then you go, oh, God, I don't have time for all this.
Yeah, yeah. It's a problem. Being an adult kind of sucks. Remember when I could just come home? Mm-hmm. I remember I could just come home and play Mortal Kombat 2, and that's all the worry I had was like, am I going to be able to 1cc it this time, or is the computer going to cheat me out of it?
I literally was doing that like a couple years ago, just coming home playing Mortal Kombat 1 and getting decked by the computer over and over.
Yeah.
That's like AI, 4 days.
AI in those games is terrible. God, it's so bad. Just blatantly cheating. Anyway, we're going to get out of here. We'll be back up in your ear holes next time. But until then, we want you, of course, to remember that we are the podcast that loves you. We're the only ones that love you.